Ladies and gentlemen, good evening and thank you for tuning in to our Thursday night programming of Totally Driven Radio. Heh, but why wouldn't you tune into the greatest show heard all around the world?
Jim Radio, Bay Ratty here, and it is the election eve. Yes, it is. That's it. Election Eve 2016. It's going to be a scary day tomorrow. But before we get into the scariness, we got some Totally Driven people for you to hear, some great music, some incredible artists. This is a pre-tape show. I do these from time to time when I have like a overflow of interviews from the live show. And it seems there's going to be a lot more pre-tape shows in the near future, so stay tuned for this one, that one, and all of them. And make sure you check out all these artists and Totally Driven people, whoever they may be. So, on tonight's show, we have two. The first one I'm going to play for you, his name is J.J. McGuigan, and he's a songwriter, musician, and he's from Wichita, Kansas. And he's really been moving forward with the musical dream right now, and he's been doing this on and off for years, and he's doing a big, like, I guess you could say, comeback to it right now. He was involved in a VH1 songwriting contest, which we're going to talk about. We're going to play some music from him afterwards, so stay tuned for JJ. He'll be up first, and then afterwards, later on in the show, second half of the show, I'm going to play an interview by an amazing, amazing musician, guitar player. His name is Russ Hewitt, and he's got like his own, and he'll describe it in the interview, where it's basically like his own kind of hybrid of music, where it's a mix of classical, new age, jazz. I mean, it's just like everything like that thrown in a blender with just amazing guitar. It's just beautiful music, and I can't say enough good words about Russ and his music, and the same goes for JJ too. So we play music from both and interviews from both. So let's get right into the first one. Here he is, Mr. JJ McGuigan.
JJ,
hey,
how you doing, man?
Good. How are you?
Good. So all right, so let's get into it. I was going over your bio and all, and this is something I didn't even realize was still really a thing, because you don't hear much about it. But VH1 Save the Music, you were actually a finalist in their song.
Back in 06, when they still had it around, I entered a song of mine in their songwriting contest, and didn't win, but I finished as a finalist for it, and that kind of sparked my belief in myself, I guess, as a songwriter. So that kind of, just kind of was a good thing, even though nothing came directly from it. It was still a good thing. So
now, did so in other words, you just sent the song into them, and they put you into, like, a contest, I would imagine? And then people, I guess, whoever voted on it, or?
Yeah, it was just basically, they had, it was the pretty big songwriting contest, and so they had a lot of people in the industry. Kind of, they would rate songs, and then you move on to the next stage. They would rate those songs, move on to the next stage, and then you just keep going and going and going. And so that's kind of how that process went. And but yeah, it was pretty cool, pretty neat deal.
Now, what song did you enter in?
It's actually one that's not on the EP that I have out now. It's called Rain. It'll be on my next one that I'm working with. Working with a guitarist and composer, Brian Elwick, a close friend of mine, on that second EP. And so we're gonna put that together and record it professionally and all that. And hopefully it'll be out here in a few months. So, yeah.
Nice. Now, did anything, like, change, like, in your musical career after that? Did you get, like, make any new contacts or get to meet any new people along the way from that, or...?
I met a couple people in Nashville, a producer and a kind of a promoter of sorts. He, from that, nothing really came, substantial other than just, again, meeting new people. And it was just a good thing. And, you know, it just kind of helped further, helped fuel my passion for it and everything. And what I kind of mean by nothing really came of it, you know, no deals were made, no, you know, records sold, but I got in touch with a few people that I'm still in contact with today. And, and so, you know, I mean, and that's always a good thing to meet people, especially in this business and everything.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you never know, you know, that was, what, 10 years ago, and you're still friends with them, so you never know what can happen.
Right, definitely, definitely. So you just want to build relationships, and for the sake of having relationships, and then also for, you know, you never know if an opportunity comes its way. You might get it, so, yeah.
Right on.
Yeah.
Now, also, I saw that you're an advocate for mental health awareness. And you were actually diagnosed at 16 years old with OCD and depression.
Right. When I was 16, basically what happened, it was just, you know, depression is one of those things. There could be a number of causes, a lot, obviously stress and just your circumstances, but as well as, you know, biologically just having a chemical imbalance as well as OCD. And it was a long process to learn about that. It was a pretty dark time for me. There were, you know, in a way I'm lucky because I had a lot of help. And I know there's a lot of people out there that don't. And so part of what I'm trying to do is just kind of do my part as best I can to make it to where, you know, people know they can overcome it. And it might just be a daily thing that you've got to do each day, but you can, you know, go after what you want and live a happy life, no matter what the diagnosis is, no matter how bad it may seem at the time. Always just give it one more day and who knows what can happen. And I think part of it is we still need better awareness, and we still need advocates, and we still need a better system that allows for people to get better help that might not have the resources at hand to do so at the time. So,
now, what do you think is, like, the biggest misconception of, you know, between depression and OCD that the public's just not really aware of?
I think with OCD, a lot of people think it's the hand washing, and that's part of it, and that's a big part of it, but that's not really what I had suffered from. There's such a thing with OCD as pure obsessional, and it's when a mixture of things, it's intrusive thoughts that can be very scary at first, because, you know, most people most of the day are relatively in charge of their minds. You know, they can think about what they want to think about, but an example might be a mother has an intrusive thought of physically harming her children, and it won't go away, and
right.
it causes a lot of confusion, a lot of anxiety, cause depression, and with that, you know, people literally think they're going crazy because that's not something they want to do, obviously, but they can't get rid of the thought, they can't get rid of the panic and the worry about it and the confusion over it. And so hopefully, you know, when that stuff starts to happen, people can recognize it and seek help, and there's different kinds of therapies out there. Cognitive behavioral therapy is one of them. You know, just talking with a friend, as well as there's medications that can help. I think it's always a combination of all of those that one needs to do in order to manage. And so that's one of the big things. And then with depression, people sometimes think, well, you just need to snap out of it type of mentality.
Right.
And, you know, it's one of those deals where if the person could, they would. I mean, it's just from the outside looking in, you can't really see what's going on. You just have
right.
to try and understand the person and hear them out and let them, you know, recover at their own pace, which is obviously going to be for them, you know, as quick as they can make it. It's just sometimes it's a long road to recovery, and the best thing is just to find a support system and for people not to be judgmental about it. It is really a big thing we need to get to, as you know, and not see it as a weakness or anything. It's definitely not. People that go through it are some of the strongest people that are out there.
Sure, absolutely.
And so, yeah.
Now, do you think writing and performing music has helped you deal with both?
Definitely has. Definitely has. It's you know, just in and of itself, doing something creative that expresses how you feel that you can't really do any other way. Music being an example of that. You can... Really, it's very rewarding to do that just for yourself, and then to branch out and see if maybe, hey, this can help other people as well. And, you know, I know what music saved my life, just plain and simple. And so part of what I strive to do is just, you know, the old saying, pay it forward kind of with it. And, you know, I've always loved music and loved writing and everything, and so a lot of what my focus is geared on, you know, making good music, but making it to where it can also heal at the same time and heal
right.
myself and heal others as well. So
nice. Now, you actually started out as a drummer,
right? When I was 13. I got my first drum set, and I was in a middle school band, and we played at school assemblies and a little bit in high school as well. And I was heavy into sports as well, and so it was just kind of a split between that. And then once college ended and I was done playing basketball, that's when music just picked up like that for me, and that's when I really started to take it seriously as far as, you know, a career and really trying to do the best I can and see how see how far I can take it. And it just hadn't stopped since being, you know, the one of the main driving forces for me. So it was definitely a good experience, you know, just being in a band that young and everything and learning to work together musically and everything. And it was a lot of fun and I had a good time. And then I picked up guitar at age 19 and then really started to get into it heavy around 22, 23. And just been playing and writing ever since. So yeah.
Now, do you still play drums too, or are you just focused mainly on guitar now?
Mainly on guitar. I've got an electric drum set that I'll do for, like, if we're trying to, you know, jam out a tune, as opposed to, because I live in an apartment, and so as opposed to getting a full set and, you know, possibly annoying 10 of my neighbors, the electric set will just kind of play loud enough to where you can get a feel of what the drums might be and everything and on that and everything. But as far as playing seriously, whatnot, I haven't really done that in a while. So it's just mainly guitar, composing on a guitar and whatnot. Picked up the keyboard about a year ago and trying to learn that. But it's also a good way to write lyrics from too as well. So,
nice.
So yeah.
Cool. So now also too, I saw you, like, you were in Texas for a little while. I guess was that for school?
Well, basically, I went down to Texas just to kind of change the pace a little bit. I went to Austin. I've got an uncle and aunt that live in Lockhart, which is just 20 miles south of Austin. And so I stayed with them for a little bit and then was in Austin with my mom because it was her brother and sister down there. And so and just tried out the music scene down there, and it was a really good music scene, just geared very much for live performances, which is something I don't really do a whole lot of. Mainly my focus is just writing songs. And so gave it a shot. And to be honest, it wasn't music that brought me back, that took me out of Austin. It was just cost of living was, you know, expensive. Traffic was expensive, or traffic was heavy, and just wasn't home for me. I just never really settled. Yeah, definitely. It's about four times the size of Wichita, but it's about the same size geographically. So,
gotcha.
So I just moved back here because I've got friends that are all in music and everything, and yeah, I figured it didn't hurt anything, so I just gave it a shot and came back. Don't have any regrets on it or anything, so it just kind of, it was a good experience being in a new town and enjoyed it, but just decided to come back to Wichita.
Now, how's the music scene there in Wichita?
The musicians themselves are very good. There are a lot of good guitar players, a lot of good live bands, good songwriters. I would say that the venues that are out there could be better for bands and singer-songwriters that really want to showcase their talents. I think some of them just haven't bought into that there's really good musicians in Wichita. I know a guy, Makasia Ryan, who lives in Wichita. He produced my EP, Dissociated, the one that's out now. And, you know, he produced and engineered with Guns N' Roses, Megadeth, Bob Dylan, you know, back in the 80s in Los Angeles and 90s. But he's from Wichita, and he moved back to Wichita, and he agrees. He's trying to make, you know, Wichita a good market for musicians and everything. And it's slowly getting there, I think. I just think it could be better, but it's not bad at all.
Right.
I just think it's just going to take time for people to recognize how much talent's in the city. So.
Now, you mentioned your EP that's out now, Dissociative.
Mm-hmm.
How long has that been out for?
Just got released last week.
Oh, nice.
Through MTS Management Group. Michael
Very
Stover
cool.
runs that. And
Michael.
He is. He already has proven to me that he's every bit as good as the awards he's won in Nashville for his management group. So, I basically got signed on with them not too long ago, less than a month ago, and put out the EP, the press release. About a week and a half ago, and so it's done pretty well. It's got a couple of good reviews, one from
cool.
Indie Spoonful and everything, and so hopefully it can make some noise. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Now, is this your first official release, or?
Yeah, it's my first official, release of music. I've made other songs and whatnot, just, put them out there on social media and whatnot, just to hear what people think. But it's my first real release of any kind. So, yeah.
What? Any reason why, it took you so long to put one together? I mean, you figure 10 years ago, you were the finalist in that.
Yeah, well, part of it was just getting the quality of recording that I needed in order to do that, because I had made songs and people had listened to them and liked the songs and music, but always the quality of recording wasn't just quite there. And so anytime I would get a, review on a song, that was always the case. And so I was just, there really wasn't any place, and I didn't have the financial resources, to spend thousands of dollars on some songs to get professionally recorded.
Right.
And then I found out about Airhouse Studios in Wichita, Kansas, which is where Makaja himself produces. And they were able to, and along with Garrett Crow, who was huge on that EP as far as vocals, instrumentals, and everything, right there with me on everything. He was huge on it, and it just took me a while to find that to where I could afford a professional recording of my songs that I could release that would be a good representation of the songs.
Right.
That. And so the whole time I've spent just trying to hone my craft and both lyrically and guitar wise and vocally. And it was just a lot of time doing that. And it got frustrating just not being able to really put something out there that was, could be officially done. And
sure.
So, but I was lucky to come across that when I did. And so we got that made, and then, it's just been last few weeks pretty exciting getting it out there and everything, and for hearing good things about it for the most part. So yeah,
nice. Now, what's the first single? I saw there was a lyric video released just recently too.
Yeah, the first single is called Letter. It's kind of a ballad, and there's if you go to JJ McGuigan Music on YouTube, there's a lyric video out there for it, and it's probably, I would rate it on that EP my best song lyrically.
Nice.
I think it can touch a lot of people. I think it can speak to a lot of people. I you know, the process of writing it, it just took a few days, and it was just really calming to write. I don't know if that makes sense at all, but it was just a good process of writing it and then putting the pieces together musically. And so, yeah, it was, I think it's a good song that people will like. It's easy to listen to. And so, yeah, that's the first song that's kind of been released out there so far.
Nice.
Off of that album. So, yeah.
Cool. Now, and you had said you're already working on your next EP already. You're like not wasting any time.
Yeah. I've got 3 songs completely written, and they've been recorded on GarageBand, which is just something that, you know, is easy to use. But I'm going to I'm working with Brian Elwick, a close friend of mine, and we're going to put together a couple more songs, maybe 2 or 3, and then go in and just record and try and knock those out best we can. And then it's kind of hard to tell on the timetable so much, just getting everybody's schedules aligned. But
sure,
hopefully here, you know, within 6 months or whatnot, we can have a product. Whether or not we'll release it then, I don't know, but just have something ready, you know, just in case it's the time's right for it. So
nice.
Yeah.
Now, will you be performing any shows or anything, or?
Right now, I haven't got any lined up. There's not a big market in Wichita for, you know, any original songwriters or anything.
Right.
I'm kind of looking elsewhere. Yeah, so I'm just trying to look elsewhere to places I can go and whatnot. But as of right now, I'm not really doing much performing, so.
That sucks. You got to get out there.
Yeah, I definitely should. And it's something I am going to do. It's just in the process right now. Part of what I do is I'm an assistant basketball coach at Newman University where I play. And so we've got the season coming up. And it's kind of hard juggling, you know, okay, how am I going to do this?
I'm
going to go to different cities and whatnot. And it's just kind of one of those things I'm just going to have to I've got a friend that performs 4, 5, 6 nights a week in town. He does a lot of cover songs and everything. And so he's a good resource to have as far as, you know, just seeing if I can maybe, you know, just hit up some shows with him and talk to some of the owners of the venues and see if maybe they think of me performing and whatnot. So, yeah, I mean, as far as doing all that, that's something I'm going to plan on doing. That's something I did in Austin. But at the same time, I need to pick it back up here in Wichita. So, yeah.
Right. Cool. So what's the plans now for the rest of the year? I can't believe the year's actually almost over.
Right.
Just basically working on the next EP?
Yeah, it's basically trying to get that out as well as promote the one that's out now and you know, get some live shows going. Seeing what I can, what those songs can do possibly. One of the things one of the avenues I'm looking at is, you know, music publishing and whatnot. Maybe getting hooked up with a publisher for those songs and seeing if they can get placements either with television, radio.
Right.
You know, just anything like that. You know, top 40 artist wants to record one of those songs signed by me, you know, because what I am at heart is a songwriter. And so I that would be awesome, you know. And so just looking for different venues and avenues to promote the music and everything.
Nice. Cool. So, all right, where can everybody get your new EP, and where can everybody find you on the internet so they can check you out and keep up to date with you?
Yeah, the EP is available iTunes, Amazon, most all your other retailers. My webpage is jjmcgliganmusic.com. You can also check out the music there and download. On Twitter, I've got an account. It's just JJ McGuigan, and it's JJ, at JJ McGuigan Music 15. And then I've got a Facebook page, a music page going,
nice.
Just JJ McGuigan. And so, yeah, you can buy the album, download any song you want, if you want to do that, or just check out my webpage or whatnot, and yeah, I'd be happy to hear from anybody as far as what they think and how they're doing. So,
cool, very cool. Well, JJ, this has been a lot of fun. I wish you luck
yeah.
and continued success. And
thank you.
Hope to hear more from you soon.
Definitely. It's been a good interview. Thank you very much.
Thanks, JJ.
Much.
Take care, my friend.
You too. All right.
Bye.
What's in my mind? I don't like what's in my heart. 'Cause all I feel is in what I believe in. Feels like two worlds apart. As I walk along in the middle. Drowning in his pain. Could you treat me like a brother and let me know I'm not alone when I feel this way? It isn't easy to admit this about me, and I only hope that you'll live. Say a prayer. We'll climb every mountain, cross every sea. Maybe I can show you something special about me. Special about me. tried to go my way. Would you read the world's letter? It's all the things I failed to say. I wanna read the world this letter for tonight. I just want you to stay. I'm gonna read the world my letter, then I'll be on my way.
All right, welcome back. Pigeon Radio Monday night. Bay Ragney here, and there you just heard. The song was called Letter, and that was by J.J. McGuigan. Make sure you check out J.J. Look for his music. You can go right to his website, jjmcguiganmusic.com, for more info on everything, where to find his music, where to find him, and where to find where he will be playing. Go. Do it. See him. Buy his music. Support him. Keep the music alive. All right, on that note, we'll be right back because we have to keep this show alive. We've got to pay the bills. And on the flip side, we'll be talking with Mr. Russ Hewitt and playing some music from Russ. So don't go away. Stay tuned.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Are you looking for a mortgage for that new home? Do you want to refinance to a lower rate, obtain cash out, or consolidation? If so, call Anthony Muscarella of Advisors Mortgage Group. Advisors Mortgage Group is a mortgage banker and loan our own money to first lien mortgage loans. We have built a platform for a seamless and stress-free mortgage process, which remains our number one goal for all of our customers. We understand that success cannot be obtained without teamwork and communication, two of our most important strengths. If you're looking to apply for a loan or simply have some questions, please don't hesitate to give Anthony Muscarella a call at 732-749-3333, extension 12, who, by the way, has been recognized by Mortgage Executive Magazine as being one of the top 1% of originators in America. That number again, call Anthony Muscarella at 732-749-3333, extension 12, where we tailor our loans to meet your needs. Advisors Mortgage Group is an equal housing opportunity lender licensed by the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance. Branch NMLS number 173453. Loan officer NMLS number 111400.
All right, welcome back to the Dream Radio. All right, part two. That's right, here comes part two of tonight's show. Two interviews. The first one is in the books already, Mr. J.J. McGuigan. Make sure, remember, jjmcguiganmusic.com. Go to his website, check him out. And up next, it's time for Mr. Russ Hewitt. Russ just released recently his third album. You can check that out. I'm not even going to try to pronounce it because I don't want to screw the name up and it'd be an insult to him. So he will pronounce it for you. I can pronounce his name, though. I'm good at that. His name is Russ Hewitt. Check out this great interview and check out some incredible music at the end of the interview. And then it's back to me. So until then, here you go.
All right, here we are. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. Thank you for taking the time and doing all this.
Hey, no problem. No problem. You're the one that's taking the time.
Well, it's what I do. I'd rather be doing this, so my pleasure.
I don't blame you. I absolutely don't blame you. So, you know, it's pretty wild. Like, as I start going through my, investigation of you, the first thing I notice is your new album's been nominated for 3 Grammys. That's pretty freaking impressive.
Well, thank you. Well, you know, to be fair, it's nominated to be nominated. It made the ballot. So that in itself, it's pretty cool. You know, if you run the stats alone, there are over 100,000 releases last year.
Wow.
And the Grammys received over 21,000 submissions. So to even be on the ballot is like, it's pretty cool.
Sure.
And then what happens is I'm actually a voting member. So we'll vote. We get 5 choices in each category, and we'll vote. And then the top 5 vote getters from each category officially, quote unquote, get the Grammy nominated, you know, prefix in front of the name. And then from there we get to re-vote, and then you have your winner.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's still pretty impressive.
It's very cool. You know, it's, I mean, you hold up in your room for hours and you spend a year in the studio mixing and recording, and you know, when you release it, you just want a chance for people to hear it, you know.
Sure.
And if you can get praise and if you can get some kind of feedback and if it's acknowledged, you know, the time and the money spent to it, then it's, you know, it makes it all worthwhile.
Absolutely. Now, when you were saying, you said there was 100,000 releases last year, is that in all categories, all genres of music, or?
That's in total. So there's, okay. and it's probably, you know, and that includes everything. That includes from all over around the world. That includes, you know, I mean, here in Dallas, there are probably 10,000 releases alone. You've got local bands, you've got mid-tier bands, you've got smaller labels, you have independent releases. You know, in this digital world, there are so many, it's so easy to record and put out an album now that,
sure,
it's a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing that it's made it easier without spending big money in a studio, big money on a producer, or even having to be signed in order to get your music out. You know, but the double-edged sword is now there's a lot of stuff that comes out that's not quite as polished as it should be, or there are some technical recording mistakes that probably shouldn't have been released, and so forth. So there's a lot of, you know, noise, if you will, out there, and it's just finding a way to cut through it all.
Yeah, and I was going to say, like, in your now you're considered like a jazz genre.
Well, that's where it gets tricky, you know, because I'm like a subgenre of a subgenre of a subgenre. It's really a small little niche that I'm in. I'm not traditional jazz. You know, when people think jazz, they'll think Chet Baker, the thing, John Coltrane, Joe Pass, the traditional jazz guys. I am not that, and I am not traditional flamenco, where, you know, there's palmas, there's sometimes a singing, there's dancing, there's their styles within the tradition of flamenco that I am not. And I'm not like like a salsa band that's got merengue and all that style. I'm not a Cuban band. What I am, it's a hybrid of everything. So when you're dealing with like Cuban music, you've got a set of rules that you've got to kind of work with. And if you do anything outside of those rules, it's not considered right and it's kind of frowned upon. And what I am is I'm like there's a lot of different titles. There's a Nueva Flamenco title. There's a Latin world. I even fall under smooth jazz. And it's where I take all these styles, all these Latin styles, from Brazilian to, again, Minko to Cuban to you name it, and I kind of mesh them together. So I'll break a lot of rules that apply to the pure version of that style. But
sure.
In a sense, I ultimately want to make listener-friendly music. And if I could sneak some technical stuff in there and some cool time signatures and changes and maybe sneak in a crazy solo here and there and so forth, you know, my audience is your parents, is the people that go to museums, people who love Yanni and Kenny G. Yet, you know, it can be a wide age group and, you know, groups of musicians. I mean, I kind of try to fill that gap to where it's technically pretty proficient if you break it down. But, you know, again, if it's something like your mom and she's listening to it, she may go, oh, well, that's pretty, you know, and just have no idea of like, oh, there's really kind of crazy things going on underneath that's happening. So I, for this year's categories, I'm under contemporary instrumental album. And for composition for one of my songs, and for best engineered non-classical. So, and even my next album, I may even go into world as opposed to contemporary instrumental. So, again, I can kind of float, and I can even float into the new age realm too. So it's
right.
It's kind of cool. I can bounce around. But it's hard to lock down and say, I am, you know, this definitively.
Does anybody give you, like, a hard time about that? Like, any peers or that get frustrated, like, ah, he shouldn't be in that category?
Well, it's, you know, it's, you're always going to deal with it. And even when I was going to school, I've got a degree in classical guitar. So, you know, I deal with that type of musician mentality from time to time. And you know, you've got the pure jazz guys that are like, you know, and you got the pure classical guys are like, and you got, you know, and it just, if you've got time to complain about that, you've got too much time because, you know, it's just, what's the three worst conversations, arguments you can have for religion, politics, and music? You know, I mean, what are you going to say that's going to convince somebody else to see your point of view? It's just, it's like this never-ending cycle of just, you know, pointless arguments. But
right,
those who get it love it. You know, I mean, even you think Kenny G, and Kenny G's been the butt of many, many jokes and so forth. But he can play. You know, if you sat down and you actually watch him, like, do a solo, he's got that circle of breathing. He can shred arpeggios and fast runs as fast as any electric guitarist. He just does it. He can, and I've seen him do it, but, you know, that's not his thing.
Right.
It's just, so it's, you know, ultimately, you've got to decide what kind of musician you're going to be. Are you going to be the YouTube one lick wonder guy, where you see this guy play a lick and you go, man, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen, but then you can't put it in a song, or you can't make a long solo out of it, or You know, you got the guys who can shred over progression but can't write a song. You've got great songwriters that can't solo that well. It's, you know, you got to kind of pick what your path is going to be. And I decided pretty early on is like, I would like to have an audience. I would like to have somebody who will listen to my music and enjoy it, put it on repeat listens to where, you know, they'll have it on if they're driving, they'll have it on in the background if they're cooking outside or having a drink and smoke outside, or they have it on the background as they, you know, do stuff around the house. But then on the flip side, if you come see me live and you see me doing the power trio thing and I've got a monster bass player and drummer behind me and we're just playing, now that's a completely different vibe than what you have on this CD. So, you know, I just want, I mean, what's the point of making music if no one's ever going to hear it? And then what's the point of making music if the whole purpose is just to argue that your genre is better than somebody else's genre? I mean, that's, I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's maddening dealing with those guys, but it comes with the business. And I mean, you could be a million selling rock or pop band. There's going to be a million people who also don't like you. So I understand it comes with the territory. And I've given up long ago trying to people please everybody and make everybody happy and justify what I'm doing or not doing. I'm just like, this is what it is, and I hope you enjoy it. And if you don't, then, you know, that's cool too.
Now, is this your is this the first time for you to be nominated for the Grammys, or were you ever nominated before for previous albums?
Well, this is actually on my first album. I actually made the ballad in 5 category.
Wow.
And it's sad what happened. The following year after that, the Grammys went in and they eliminated a ton of categories. Like, I was up for like best pop solo performance, best like pop original. There was a whole slew of things that the Grammys got rid of the following year, and there was such a backlash. I think they got rid of jazz even, and there was such a backlash that they decided to bring some of these categories back. But yeah, on my first one, I made the ballot for 5, and that was long. You know, I'm still learning the music business as I go, and there's so much that I learned even this time around on the Grammy stuff. But on the first time around, I was completely in the dark on what to do and, you know, how to solicit votes and things I should be doing in the meantime. So that happened on my first one. On my second CD, I simply just missed the date of submission. It was an oversight on my part. The first submission for my first CD was actually done by one of my engineers, and then on the second CD, you know, I thought he was going to do it, he thought I was going to do it, and then we missed the deadline. I was like, so this time around for my third CD, then I made sure that it was done and done ahead of time and so forth. So.
So that had to be pretty mind-blowing, though. I mean, for your first album to get nominated 5 times.
It was. You know, we were fortunate enough, again, within my style of this new wave of flamenco stuff, the smooth jazz radio actually plays it as well. So I enjoyed one track made the top 20, another one made the top 40. I was one of the number one artists for Music Choice, the thing on the TV for the summer for that year for smooth jazz. So it got an incredible response on radio, got a ton of press and reviews, and you know, it was quite surprising. But I had spent, it's a funny story, it was not really funny, but the story on the first CD is that it was recorded twice. And the first time we recorded it, we had all kinds of sonic problems, just from the drums to the guitars to the stuff to where you can't really fix. It could have passed off, I guess, but a year and a half into this recording, and it was mixed and done, my producer and I was like, you know, this can be better. So we trashed the complete recording, re-recorded everything again, and
holy cow.
I mean, the whole process took over 3 years. But we just wanted it. We just wanted it right, you know. In this time of this day and age of digital, everything lasts forever. Pictures, recordings, stuff that wasn't
right.
supposed to mean meant, you know, to last forever is out there. And so once it's out, there's no taking it back. So it was like, let's do this right, let's do this to where it's sonically, you know, as good as it can possibly be, because it'll last forever. And much like myself, like if I discover a new artist, like when I discovered Muse, I was like, oh, and then I went back and got the whole back catalog and got familiar with the stuff. So I knew, you know, as I build an audience by my third or fourth CD, and then they discover me, they're going to go back and get all my old stuff. And
right.
I want the quality to be as good as the new stuff and not sound like it's a demo, and it's not sound like, you know, it was done in somebody's garage or somebody's bedroom. So we just had to make sure it was good as it could possibly be before we released it.
That had to be so frustrating. I mean, I know me personally, like, I'm the type of person, like, I hate to have to redo things and or even say things over, you know what I mean? So I can't imagine having to go through that whole process again. I would have been miserable.
Well, it just, you know, yes and no. For many years, I was in rock bands, and we would put out CDs, and I caught myself more times than I care to admit when I handed out, you know, back in the day, there was tapes and, you know, homemade press CDs. I caught myself making a pre-excuse. Here's our tape, but, I mean, our new songs are a lot better, or, you know, here's our tape, but, you know, the next, you should really hear this stuff that's coming up. And I was always making an excuse as I was handing out these recordings, like, oh, just wait for the next one, but just kind of bear me with this one. And it was a little embarrassing, and I was like, you know, I never want to make a pre-excuse before I hand anything out again ever.
Right.
Because if I've got to make that pre-excuse, then it's not good enough to hand out. And so that coming from the rock world, that was already, you know, I had done that for so long. I just made a conscious decision, like, no, for now on, it's going to be top notch or it's nothing. And then the other cool thing that happened with the re-recording of the first CD was my producer called in his LA friends to do this recording. So I got some monster players on drums. There's a guy named Walfredo Reyes Jr. He's done like 5 Santana albums. Steve Winwood, Ricky Martin, Christina Aguilera. He's been on hundreds and hundreds of recordings. He's on tour now in Chicago. So he's on drums. I got a guy named Rafael Padilla on percussion, and he was the percussionist for the Miami Sound Machine. So the song Conga is actually him on Conga. So he was with them. He was with Shakir. Now he's been with Chris Isaac for the last 10 plus years. So he's on percussion. I got a flamenco prodigy guy on rhythm guitar. He's now in L.A. doing big stuff. He was with the Chiquin All-Stars, doing a ton of recordings and tours out there. And then my bass player, who's also my producer, I got him on the track as well. So I got all new set of players, and it elevated my songs to the point of, like, I wouldn't have thought of them on my own. And it just,
right.
It took the recording to the next level. So it frustrating, yes, but being, you know, not being signed and being independent artist, it wasn't like anybody was waiting on it. You know,
right.
It wasn't like, when's that Russ Hewitt debut CD coming out? You know, so I had the cushion and the funds to be able to do it without the pressure of a timeline. And, you know, it's a lot harder to get people to come back to you if you put out a crappy recording and you know, because they're just going to think, well, that first one was crappy. Why do I think this next one's going to be any better? As opposed to putting out something that makes them go, well, I enjoyed the first one. Let's hear what LT has to offer. So it was, you know, there's a little mental game to get my head around doing it again, but I think in the long run it paid off.
Nice. Now, is that like your band? Like if you go out on tour or do shows, are they the players with you at all times? Or
no, they're my recording band, and then I've got equally phenomenal local players that I'll play with. And when I do shows out in California, I've got incredible players that I have out there that play with me. So, you know, it's one of those things. We kind of stumbled upon a formula, my producer and I, where players, they understand what I'm trying to do. You know, Walfredo and Rafael and Alfredo, who's the rhythm guitarist, you know, they know that I'm not going for a pure Cuban song. It's got to be this. They come from a pop sense. So they understand the mixture of making a Latin, but not too Latin, that it can't be,
right,
you know, played. And so there's just a formula. There's a musical connection. There's stuff where, you know, they get what I'm trying to do, what they bring to the table with their experience in playing. Is great. So we've locked into a formula, and if you think about it, it's kind of funny. Like if a debut artist becomes big and the album sells big, the first thing they do is they fire the band and they fire the producer, and they, you know, because
right,
now they've got money and now they're going to go for the big name. And it's like, well, why would you just undo what made you successful to begin with? Just because,
right,
you have the opportunity doesn't necessarily mean that that's better. So, for my recording group, again, because we're kind of in a groove, we kind of know, you know, what the overall vision of my music is going to be. I don't like to introduce foreign opinion. Although on the second album, even this album, I've had some incredible guest artists. You know, Larry Carlton played on the radio single. And then Ardeshir Farah from the group Strunz and Farah played on a song as well. And I had an accordion player, you know, but they were brought in as a guest artist. You know, here's a song, you know, work your magic on it. But for the core of the recording, those guys will always remain the same. If I end up doing a different type of project with something, you know, then I'll use different players and so forth. But like I said, we've just kind of locked into a groove, and I would just hate to break that up.
Yeah, that is pretty funny, though, the way you say how, like, you know, artists, once they hit something big, then they'll get rid of the band and the producer, and it's a crazy business. It really is.
Yeah, and you know, I can see them doing out of panic, and I can see them doing it out of people getting to their ear. Hey, you know, that was great, but now we've got this guy that's got these credits wanting to work with you. You know, and of course you're honored and you're thrilled and you go, yeah, and blah blah blah. So I can see, you know, I can see them being influenced, and I can see them not wanting to lose the success or momentum that they have, and going for the bigger name and going for the bigger production and so forth. But yeah, and sometimes it works, but I mean, oftentimes it doesn't. And then, you know, cause I'll hear a second album go, well, that sounds nothing like the first one. Sounding like nothing like, you know, what I liked about them to begin with. So it's almost like watching Behind the Music, and you go, okay, these are the pitfalls I'm going to try to avoid moving forward.
Right.
You know? And I can see it with some of these, and obviously I'm nowhere on the level in on anything with the big artists, but I just see what they do and go, man, I don't know if I do that myself, but best of luck.
Now, you had mentioned too, you know, when you used to play in like rock bands and all. What made you change genres of music?
Well, to be fair, I'm always going to be a rock guy. I'm always going to be, you know, a hard rock, heavy metal guy. I still keep up with the latest trends and bands and so forth. And the funny thing is a lot of the artists that are actually in my genre are ex-guitar players. I mean, there's a very famous duo, the Rodrigo El Gabriela, who are headlining festivals, been on late night shows. They're huge, and they're ex-rock guys. So I was just doing the rock thing for years, and I was doing this style, this Nuevo Flamenco style in restaurants. And even in the 90s when the guitar solos went out of favor, I was still doing these long solos and improvisation in the restaurants doing the flamenco stuff. So I was actually able to keep my chops up because in that current music at the time of grunge and new metal, there really wasn't any solos to speak of.
Right.
But it just, after my last rock band broke up, and it's hard to get two people to agree on anything, much less a band that's got four or five people where everybody's thoughts
sure.
and opinions kind of run. And it just, after the singer quit, which is usually the case, and the band was just kind of there, I just, the thought of having to start back over in a garage to rewrite, you know, a whole new set list and an album worth of stuff with a new singer at that age, to then go hand out little flyers at a club to get 20-year-olds to come hear my band play, just, I was like, I can't do that anymore. You know,
right.
And the reality of the business is that there's no record label that's going to find a 30-year-old rock band. Just,
sure.
There's just not. So my producer at the time, who actually produced the last rock album that I did, had come down to Dallas to do some overdubs and went to see my flamenco band play live. And he was like, he goes, once this rock thing ends, we need to record you doing this stuff. And then, you know, sure enough, you know, a couple of years later, the band broke up. And he gave me a call and said, let's go ahead and let's move forward with the flamenco thing. And it's been great. You know, I've had more reviews, more press, more radio play doing the flamenco stuff than all of the rock band years combined. And I really enjoyed it, and it was something that I've been doing anyway for years. And, you know, it wasn't like I felt like I was settling or, you know, having to resort to this. It was like, okay, cool. This is as cool as anything that I've done before, so let's go with it.
Right.
And you know, I'm very happy that I did.
Wow. That's, that just speaks, I guess, volumes right there, too, about the rock music business compared to other genres.
Yes, and I get it. You know, I mean, I understand why they do the things that they do. As you get older, now you got wife, and now you got kids, and now you got a job, and you can't go on the road for 6 weeks and come home with nothing except exposure because you got to pay your bills, or your wife's not going to let you, or you're a single parent, or you know, it just, and it takes so much time and it takes so much money to get a band truly off the ground that unless you're 20, you know, maybe by the time you're 25, then you can get things going. Or if you're 17, by the time you're 20, you know, I mean, and if you look back at all those bands, those rock bands, before, I mean, Rat, I mean, Warren, the guitarist for Rat was 21 when their second album came out. Out of the cellar that made them huge, you know. So there's a time frame in which you're willing and or even able to get into a van and do a Vans tour or an Ozfest tour where you're eating sandwiches and you're sleeping in the van, but you're playing and it really doesn't matter. And again, as you get older and so forth, it's just a pure investment return. If someone comes up with a couple hundred thousand to invest in a rock band at 35, chances are they're never going to get that money back. So, it's just the reality of the business. And you know, I spent many hours complaining about it, but at the same time, I get it too. You know, I understand why things are done the way they're done, and so forth.
Wow. Now, how about like musicians you played with in the past and those past bands? Are they some people are just like very tunnel visioned, where it's just like, you know, rock, metal, and that's it. And for you to, you know what I mean? For you to go over to this whole new style that you've created your own style where you've, you know, mixed all these genres. Have any of them been like, dude, like, what the hell are you doing?
Well, no, it just, you know, it's funny. It's been a lot of time. It's been quite some time since I've been in the band. And it's like anything, you know, some no longer do music. Some just do cover bands now, you know, or they play in a tribute band, or they're not playing at all, or they kind of play and so forth. I mean, I make music because I have to. And people always ask, you know, usually at the end of interviews or when I do a clinic or something, like, do you have advice for, you know, an upcoming musician? And I always say the same thing, which is make music because you have to make music, not because you want to or think that's going to be neat or wouldn't this be fun. I would be a very miserable person if I didn't make music. And you know, the sacrifices that you do in order to make music was just something I was always going to do. And you know, guys in the rock bands and so forth, because over the years, it's probably been 100 different players. You know, the priorities change, the situations change. I mean, I've never gotten blowback from anybody that I used to play with, you know, not liking what I'm doing. It's just, you know, some are still doing it. Some are still in the rehearsal space, you know, rocking out. But most of them actually have moved on to something else. But it just, you know, I've always kind of had the same mentality. And even when I was in the rock band stuff, I was like the overthinker, which kind of drove the other players crazy. It's like, well, just come up with a riff. And then I was like, well, that riff sounds like this and that riff sounds like that. And let's do something that, you know, that hasn't been heard before. Of course, you know, famous last words, but, you know, I was always trying to push the envelope and see the bigger picture. And they were always like, just give me a riff. And then the singer write the lyrics and I'll put the drum line and we'll just play it. I'm like, you know, but we put no thought into the song, and is it a good song, a catchy song? And you know, that's usually the role of what a producer would do. If a producer gets a hold of a band, and you know, they've got the final say and they'll shape the band and so forth. And I was trying to do that just as the guitar player, and I was just, you know, they just wanted a riff, and I was like, well, we need to kind of create something better than that. So I think for how I approach music, what I'm doing now fills that need, because I can get as clever as I want. I mean, I can explain something that's crazy technical, that, you know, here's a song that's in 11/8 that's in the Dorian mode that goes to Phrygian for the chorus, and then the groupings are 4+4+3. I mean, I can get crazy like that, but then still ultimately make it a listener-friendly song. And something like that, I would never be able to do in the rock band, because again, I'd be shut down before I can even get halfway through of what I'm trying to create. So, you know, in this situation now, it really fits like my mental approach.
Cool. Now, how about too, like, even like listening to your music, like you just become very, like, just relaxed. It's just like, ah, yeah. And you have a very relaxed personality, it seems. And so I was wondering, like, does it even relax you even more, like, when you listen to your own music or play it?
Well, you know, the disadvantage that I have is it's hard for me to turn off my musician ears, you know, and I do my best not to overanalyze stuff as I listen to it, you know, but it's, what's that saying with painters? They never finish a painting. They just at some point stop or give up and move on to the next one. So I'm always listening to my music and going, you know, I wonder if I should have did this instead. I wonder if I would have arranged this differently. And, you know, but it's funny that you mentioned relaxing, because my wife, you know, I've been married for several years now, and she's obviously very familiar with all my music. And just probably a couple of months ago, she goes, you know, she goes into work in the morning and the drive is stressful as all morning commutes are. And she's like, oh, you know, I stuck on your CD and it relaxed me on the way home, on the way to work. I'm like, huh, really? You know, that's interesting. We kind of had this music for all these years and you're just now listening to it on the way to work. So, so now she's turned on to a couple of other friends who now listen to it on the way to work, on the way home from work, and it relaxes them. You know, but the goal of the music is to create blank canvas. So when you know, the individual listens to it, you know, if you got a song with lyrics, you're kind of dictating what the theme and the story is, which is fine. But with my music, with instrumental music, you want to create a blank canvas to where the listener projects whatever they want onto it. You know, sometimes you listen to the song and it reminds you of a place that you've been. It maybe makes you think of a place that you want to go to. It puts you in a particular state of mind. And with the relaxing aspect of it, again, it's like the wolf in clothing. Yes, it's very relaxing. Again, but if you see us live, it's a little bit more up front and in your face. It's a little bit more aggressive than the recording, which is a little different take on the production of this CD. But again, if your mom listens to it, it would be listening to it, oh, that's relaxing. If you're a musician and you're breaking down, you know, what's going on, you go, oh, I guess there's a little bit more happening there. So it's sneaking in without being new age music, which is just like yoga and meditation music, but there's still more going on, but not so heavy that it's a 10-minute Meshuggah song or a 12-minute Dream Theater song, or which I love, but, you know, that's just not what I do.
So you have a new selling, like, way you can market your music is for people to drive or people to listen to during rush hour traffic.
Yeah, I came across, the funniest thing I came across is there's a whole lullaby series that music by, like, Metallica and AC/DC used all of these rock bands and their music turn into lullabies. And it's the coolest thing to hear, like, Inner Sandman, but done in a lullaby for babies. It's like, wow, that's an angle I wouldn't have thought of, and then wouldn't have thought it would have worked, but it's actually really, really cool. Guns N' Roses as a lullaby. And it's like, oh, why that really works like that? So yeah, maybe Music to Drive To, this should be the title of the next album.
That's awesome. That is awesome. So, all right. So, the latest album. Now, I can't pronounce names for the life of me. So, it's called. Is it Cielo?
Cielo. Cielo Nocturno.
See, I never would have got that.
Yeah, it's Spanish. You know, it's my wife is Spanish, so she helps with all the titles, and it's, you know, just staying within the theme. It means night sky, and it's kind of a, it's kind of a wink to my first CD, which is Baja El Sol, which is Under the Sun. So I kind of tied it, you know, sun and night between the first album and the third album.
Nice. Very, very cool. And where can everybody get that?
I am on all the digital programs, so iTunes, Amazon, Napster, really any place that sells digital music, I should be on there. And then if you'd like a physical CD, I've got, you can go to CD Baby and you can get a physical CD through them. And they also have my first two CDs on there as well.
Nice. Very, very cool. And how about show-wise? Do you do much touring at all, or...?
I'm going to, next year I'm going to start to ramp it up. This last year plus, just between the recording of the CD and mixing, we spent 8 months mixing the CD. I mean, obviously not every day, but we spent a long time getting, you know, the right mixes and levels and so forth. And I was with the producer the entire time for all of that. So, just from the recording, and then I've been working with my video lady, and here in a couple of weeks through next year, I'm gonna be doing a video every month. So between that and the videos, and then obviously with the music, there's a whole leg of press and promotion that I've been doing, and it will probably do until the end of the year. So next year, I'm going to be playing out at NAMM, which is a big convention in California in January. And
right.
I've got a couple big shows that are lined up. That contract hasn't been signed yet, but if they do, it's going to be pretty cool. So I always have my calendar updated on my website at russhewittmusic.com. You can check that out. And I've got a newsletter sign up, which I only put out about 3 or 4 a year because it's just another thing I got to do, but and I'll you know what I mean, you know what I mean on that. So I but I'll usually, you know, the big things that are happening, big shows and concerts, I'll get into the newsletter as well. But now this is the final phase of the release of the, you know, the release cycle of this new CD, and next year I'll just focus in more on playing and touring.
Nice. Well, hopefully you make it out here to the Philadelphia area.
Yeah, I would love to, actually. That would be awesome. But I'll be blowing up your phone if I do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll hit you up on Facebook. This way we'll be friends, and just let me know when, and I'm there. Cheesesteaks on me.
Awesome. All right, so this is what I understand about Philadelphia. There's a dividing line between the two Philly cheesesteak styles, right?
Okay.
I always see it like Anthony Bodone, like when he does Philadelphia, there's like the Philly cheesesteak that uses the certain kind of cheese, and then there's the cheesesteak place that's across the street that does the completely different.
There's Cheese Whiz.
Uh-huh.
Or you can do American cheese or provolone cheese, okay. Whichever you prefer.
So which style do you go for?
I like it better with American cheese. But most places do the Cheese Whiz.
All right. Well, I'll make it down there.
I'm a fat guy, so I like it always, and we can try it each way. So we'll let you decide.
Awesome. That will work for me.
Cool. Well, this has been a lot of fun, and
Yeah, I'll let you guys know when this is going up. Probably early next week.
Awesome, man. Well, again, I appreciate your time. And
absolutely,
it's been great. Thanks, man.
Cool. Thanks so much.
Well,
Ross. Great talking to you.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you. And yeah, let's just stay in touch moving forward.
Sounds like a plan. Thank you,
man. You have a good night.
You too. Bye.
Okay. Bye. Bye.
Laser Radio Bay Ragney here, and there you go. Mr. Russ Hewitt played two songs from him off his latest album. First one was called North of Home, and the second one was called Persian Sky. So go to RussHewittMusic.com for more information on Russ, all of his music, upcoming dates, and social media, and all that fun stuff. Make sure, again, go buy the music, support the music, keep the music alive. So there you go. There's tonight's show. We'll be returning. We'll be live on Thursday night, myself and my co-host, Mr. Jimmy Giannetti. And we have this coming Thursday, we have two guests lined up. We have, her name is Steph with an F from the band City of the Week. And we also have, his name's Possible Pat. And if you look this guy up, the guy, he lost over 300 pounds, basically from walking. So I'm really looking forward to talking to Pat. And, of course, we have Kristen Burt calling in with our Hollywood news. And all the other fun stuff myself and Giannetti cook up to talk about. So stay tuned. Be ready for Thursday's show. And make sure to check out all the other shows on our network, just for Totally Driven Entertainment, on all of social media, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and look for Totally Driven Radio as well. Check out our website, TotallyDrivenRadio.com, and look for us. Follow us, like us, love us, get driven. Until next time, people, see ya.